And joining me now in the KRVS studios is Jay Steiner. He is an artisan at Vermilionville, here to talk about their annual cochon de lait, sometimes a boucherie, but it's a cochon de lait this year,
yes.
And all of the activities that are going to take place during this cochon de lait, which will be a week from Sunday, so it will be on the 17th,
yes.
Sunday, November 17th,
yes.
At Vermilionville. Now, you started the first event.
Yeah.
As you said, you've kind of alternated between cochon de lait and boucherie. So obviously that whole activity is very important to you. And I think you've really kind of taken it upon yourself to learn a lot about the history of it.
Absolutely.
And all the makings of the various items. So how did you get interested in that?
Growing up here in South Louisiana, food just kind of is part and parcel of everything down here. And I grew up in what I would say, I grew up southern in South Louisiana. Two different things. And so
South of I-10?
There you go. So, like, my family is, I have Louisiana family, but they're up in Grant Parish, definitely not South Louisiana. And I do have family up in Kentucky. So, and as you can hear how I talk, I don't sound like I'm from South Louisiana. So I always was around Southern food, but then going to my friend's house and seeing rice and gravy instead of potatoes and gravy and little things like that. So it gave me kind of a glimpse at both sides of it. And once I got into working at Vermilionville 8 years ago this year, exploring history down here, it was, you know, I'd been teaching before, and teaching with students, you know where you're going. Whereas Vermilionville, I have one tour that's, you know, older folks, one tour that's not from America, one tour of young third graders. And so having to adapt the, you know, let's be honest, sometimes rough history of mm-hmm. South Louisiana mm-hmm. and the rest of the South. But doing it through food, I always found was a really great way to explore it. And of course, you know, you get people right in that one thing that really brings us all together, which is food. So, you know, food can separate us at times, but at the end of the day, we all need something to eat, and it's best when we enjoy it with people we love. And that's why I love the traditions that bring people together. So,
and a lot of people seem to enjoy the food of South Louisiana.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. It's not a hard sell.
No, it's not. It's really, yeah, working as a food tour guide, working as a food historian for Millionville, doing all this stuff, it's a pretty good gig. I like it. It allows me to share the cuisine of this area, which I think, you know, when you talk to people who've been here before, I remember Bourdain famously always referred to loving coming down here because it's one of these areas that's kind of a vortex of culture. Any place you go in the world, whether it be South Louisiana, the Levant in the Middle East, Southeast Asia, Spain in the Mediterranean, all those areas where you have this group crossing and this group coming and this group coming, and sometimes it's messy, but sometimes it's okay, and they trade and then they fight, and all the while they're cooking and exchanging, and you know it creates this cool food culture.
Yeah, introducing new ingredients to an area.
Yeah, both mm-hmm. commerce and war generate a pretty big appetite.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of that down here, just like in those other places. So.
Right, absolutely. So what was it about the cuisine? As you're saying, a lot of your family is from other places.
Mm-hmm.
What was it about this cuisine, these ingredients that really engaged you?
It's nice having a spice cabinet that's more than a salt and pepper shaker. So, and being able to explore the fact that, you know, you can take this one ingredient, let's say, you know, we're just dealing with pork. I grew up with, you know, pork chops, and I love mm-hmm. me some pork chops. But, you know, most people's experience with pork, if they're not from South Louisiana or really from the South, is bacon and pork chops, and that's
mm-hmm.
about it.
Mm-hmm.
And pork kind of gets that, you know, put on the back burner, so to speak. But
don't
down
really
here,
experiment with
not
it.
Not at all,
yeah.
not at all. Mm-hmm. But down here, what we do is through both seasonings and through cooking techniques, we bring different flavors out of that relatively simple ingredient and a relatively simple, you know, host of ingredients to add to that. We're not throwing the list of ingredients here is not very long. You have
mm-hmm.
your Trinity,
mm-hmm.
you know, usually you have your flour for a roux, some vegetables here and there, and of course some spices, but it's not that complex, but we get these amazing complex flavors out of it, and that's kind of what I
right.
love about it.
And we're kind of a little island, I guess, when you think of it. I mean, there's a lot of interest recently in barbecue.
Absolutely.
And, you know, traditions of barbecue. We seem to be an island that has our own way. You know, that we
Definitely.
Don't barbecue. I mean, people enjoy it here, but it's not the same focus. We
yeah.
use so many other different ingredients
yes.
and enjoy pork and other meats in very different ways.
I always tell people when I take them around to eat in South Louisiana that sometimes we stop at a barbecue restaurant, and mm-hmm. and people are like, well, barbecue, I didn't really associate that with South Louisiana. And I tell them that you know, not to pick on any places, but, you know, those three or four regions that are very known for their barbecue, that's kind of all they've all got. Whereas we have so much here that barbecue gets, you know, 15, 20, you know, 20th spot on the list. Still good. Still great. Yeah. But it's, you know, we're just kind of have an embarrassment of riches down here when it comes to food.
And in part, it is because of some of the traditions of the cochon de lait and boucherie that developed over time.
And a lot of those traditions, the thing I love talking about them the most is that it ties into the nature of society down here for so many years. You had a lot of, you know, working class kind of agrarian society here. But of course, if we go back before a certain time, we had sharecropping, and then before that, you had the slave trade. And so you have a society that, you know, at first glance and growing up here, we kind of get this, you know, nice little hunky-dory view of it. But exploring it even more, you see clear divisions and a lot of, you know, oppression going through there. But how people manage to keep traditions alive. And going through cochon de lait and boucheries and all our recipes here, it's a way to explore not just, you know, the history of, you know, French and Spanish and those Western European cultures here, but our food here is undeniably African. It's undeniably indigenous. And it's a great way to explore cultures that previously have, you know, unfortunately been marginalized, not just in, you know, society, but in the discussion of history as well. So it gives us a chance to really explore that.
Right. And people like yourself who are taking it upon themselves to explore the traditions and the history are making us all more aware of the depth of the cuisine here. I remember, I mean, I'm from here, grew up here, but it wasn't until I lived in Marseille for a year that in the market I saw okra and I went, oh, okra.
Yeah.
But it was called Le Gombo.
Gombo, yeah.
And I is where we get that
there
word.
There you go. There you go. And I always tell people when it comes to, you know, our indigenous food, half of the ingredients we use, you know, that Trinity would be pretty empty without bell peppers and without cayenne pepper and corn mukshu without tomatoes and corn and peppers and no sweet potatoes, no potatoes. There's countless, you know, items of indigenous agriculture and food down here that show up.
Right, and don't exist in other states around us.
There you go. There you go. We definitely have our own way of doing things.
I want to tell people who are finding themselves very interested by what you're saying. My guest, Jay Steiner, started this wonderful event having to do with cooking a pig, and whether it's the cochon de lait or the boucherie, there are lots of interesting activities that they've planned around it this year. So you've done it a few times. Mm-hmm. You've kind of road tested what people are most interested in and how you want to present this. So on Sunday the 17th, what can we expect to see? Are you going to have what size is a pig for a cochon de lait?
So cochon de lait traditionally was, of course, people who know a little bit of French know it basically means a suckling pig, a pig that's still nursing. And traditionally that would mean a pig that was, you know, right around 100 pounds or less, maybe up to 150. Usually they were pigs that, you know, had moved a little past that if you want a nice bigger one. But most of the time you're not going to go past 150 pounds, 200 pounds at the most. So it's not it's a very young pig. And because of that, you don't have as much, you know, as much meat left over. Whereas a boucherie, you're dealing with full-grown hogs that the purpose was to preserve meat. Mm-hmm. And that's why it was done in the winter time. Use everything and only some parts of it were cooked then and there to serve the people at the boucherie, whereas cochon de lait is a celebration. It's people coming in, we're going to start with the pig and we're going to end with, you know, just bones and full bellies. That's what it is.
Sounds like a t-shirt.
There you go. Maybe so. I don't know. So, but at this cochon de lait this year, we're exploring not just the pig because myself and a lot of other people at Vermilionville, we started exploring a lot. I guess I got to give credit to my coworker, Austin Keller, there, getting me really into studying cattle culture here in South Louisiana. And, you know, not to make any of our, you know, listeners in Texas mad, but we did have cattle ranching here in Louisiana about 100 years before Texas was even a state. And the great American cattle culture that we know of today really starts down along the Gulf Coast. And one of the big places was South Louisiana. And so we've kind of forgotten that. And it's, of course, it moved on westward, but we want to talk about the history of that and how it still affects us today. And of course, you know, all my friends down in Vermilion Parish and in Cameron Parish can definitely tell us, oh, we still have some cattle down here, and we still definitely know what to do with it. Had some good brisket today. So,
well, I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, we tend to think of other agricultural crops and definitely pork, and but not quite as much the beef. Although, I mean, if you drive out in the countryside in Louisiana, you definitely see the cattle herds.
And especially if you go west of Lafayette into that south, you know, west, southwest Louisiana, you get into land that is perfect for cattle ranching because it's the southeastern corner of the Great Plains.
Right.
That little, you know, toehold of the Great Plains in Louisiana, and it's perfect for raising cattle. And, of course, the cultures that were coming here have been raising cattle for years, whether it be Spaniards or the French from southern France and the Camargue region, or you have sub-Saharan Africans, Senegambians, and Canary Islanders raising cattle for hundreds and thousands of years in some cases. So it's, you know, an undeniable part of our culture down here that we, you know, doesn't necessarily stick around, but it's still influences us.
All right. So how are you going to merge that history and cuisine with the Cochon de Lait? How is
so
that
what we'll be doing is during the Cochon de Lait, we'll be having, you know, when it comes to the food, I'll mention that first, but the food will be having some tasting. The kind of the subtitle for this year's Cochon de Lait is Forgotten Foods of the Cow. So we'll be having some tastings throughout the day for visitors to taste some things that, you know, they might not get a chance to taste anymore. That might be considered a little bit out of fashion when it comes to food, but still very good for those of us in the know. So we'll be having some liver and onions, some jambalaya made with beef tongue, my favorite cut of beef, some cowboy stew with a little, you know, extra parts, you know, some little organ meats and this and that. And then we'll also be having a tasting of the Cochon de Lait. So we got your beef and your pork going. But the Cochon de Lait, we're actually going to do it like we did in previous years, two different styles. We'll be doing the traditional style on the open fire, you know, turning it that way. And we'll be doing a modern style in the what they call the little Cajun microwave type thing. So where it's, if anything, we call it a modern style, but it's actually just a more updated version of the earliest forms of barbecue by basically making a pit and making your own oven out of that.
So you're going to have a lot going on
there. We do.
it's not just going to be one little arena where everyone's going to gather. It sounds like a lot of things are happening. So how is all this information going to get out? I know you're kind of the MC, but how will people learn about these things?
So yeah, we're not just feeding your belly. We're feeding your brain too. That's what we do. So we're going to have throughout the day, I'm going to be giving some presentations three times during the day on cattle and pork culture down here, both in terms of agriculture as well as cuisine. So I'll have my nice big collection of cookbooks out for everyone to come see, do a little short presentation, a lot of Q&A stuff. Then we'll also have some soap making demos because, of course, you know, the boucheries weren't just a time to preserve food. You got a lot of fat from that. And once you take your hardwood ash and make some potassium hydroxide, you got lye, and you can make some soap this time of year. So Stu Keller is going to be doing some soap making demos back in the village. And then we will also have a panel discussion with myself, Max Bakke, and Zach McMath, three people who are involved in the local food community here. And it'll be moderated by one of our historical interpreters there, April Kent, at Vermilionville. And we'll be discussing, you know, kind of the history, you know, past, present, and future of our local food community here. There, it's, you know, an issue that all of us are talking about when we talk about, you know, do we want, you know, national control of our foodways or, you know, kind of corporate things, or when we, you know, there's the farm to table thing is real hot right now. And so it's that discussion of how do we walk that line between keeping control over our foodways and control over our food traditions here, but also fitting into the 21st century and globalization and all that. So we'll be having a nice little rousing discussion
about
that.
That's a lot to cover. Sounds fascinating.
Yeah. And we'll have a little Q&A as part of that, too.
And it's also wonderful to remind people of some past traditions. You know, that gets forgotten very quickly. And, you know, the tourism certainly has done wonders for the state, bringing people in and helping artisans like yourself and other people, you know, do your work and present things. But it tends sometimes you lose a bit of the complexity and you lose some of the layers of tradition.
Yes.
And, of course, with modern refrigeration and various things, we no longer need certain traditions, and so those drop away.
We've definitely undergone a kind of a sea change in not just South Louisiana food culture, but American food culture and really around the world. And in some areas, you do see some countries trying to, either on national, you know, provincial or local levels, trying to hold on to those food traditions, those food ways. Of course, we're in the present and we're moving into the future. And if we can do something better, why not? But also, sometimes we lose some things. So those community oriented traditions like Chandelier, and especially boucheries and things like that, when we lose those traditions, yes, we might have our nice deep freezers and refrigerators that keep our food preserved longer, and it's a lot easier. But also, if we lose that community aspect, are we, we might
what
be
happens?
Having safer food, yeah. but we're kind of losing some connection with our neighborhood, with our neighbors and our community. So we'd like to, and that's, what we do at Vermilionville. We're not just for visitors coming in here. We want the whole community to come out. We want everyone to come here and learn some new things. Some of my favorite people to meet at Vermilionville are locals who come here and say, well, I didn't know that, or I didn't know this. Or
right. My great-grandparents used to do that, but I don't have the opportunity anymore.
And it gives them a chance to, step away from the present day. It can be a hectic world these days. And, of course, that's not to say it wasn't a hectic world in the past, but it's nice to see how some things have changed for the better. Maybe some for the worse, but how we can all kind of reconcile that and enjoy, the legacy of our ancestors.
Right. Yeah. Although as you're talking, I remember my grandmother telling me as a young girl up near Port Barry, the crocks were kept in her bedroom. And these were like stone crocks.
Yep.
They would fry the steaks, put them in the crocks, and then cover them with grease.
Yep. Yep.
And that preserved them, and
absolutely.
It was in her bedroom.
Yeah.
And when they needed steak, they would dig it out of the grease and fry it up again.
There you go.
So I think maybe that's fascinating to hear, but I think a lot of young girls would go, oh, not in my bedroom.
My your cardiologist might have something to say about storing steak and fat
too.
But, of course, we just have so much food today that gets into the thing. I think you could kind of get away with doing that back then because you did have a lighter diet. So.
Well, right. And that's the only way you could preserve
absolutely.
In that day.
Absolutely.
So it's fascinating to hear some things and then you can kind of leave some of those in the past.
We can definitely update some things without.
Right. But others, we really do want to know how to make some of these things that you're going to
definitely.
Be demonstrating. Can you talk just a bit about you? It looks like somebody's going to be doing cracklins and
We're definitely
jambalaya.
Going to have we're also going to have a demo of not just, from the savory side, but on the sweet side too.
Ah, okay.
So in our cooking school, we'll be having some oreille de cochon being made, some pig ears, which are nice little pastry things. So don't worry, they're not real pig ears, although if they were, I'd be there. But they're going to be kind of a fried dough pastry with some, steen syrup and those pecans on top, some good cane syrup in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, at the end of all the day, after you're done watching us make some, roast some pig, do some cochon de lait, make some cracklin, make some pig ears, you got to burn some calories. So at the end of the day, we do have Leroy Thomas and the Zydeco Roadrunners going to be playing. So we can, I've been working out a little bit recently, so I'm going to have to change to my dancing shoes that way.
All right. So what time are they playing? You said 1 to 4?
They're going to be playing from 1 to 4, yes.
Okay.
And that's, every Sunday we do have a band playing at Vermilionville, but this is just, we're kind of adding this to our big old food celebration that day.
Right. So. If you are just tuning in, we're talking about the Cochon de Lait at Vermilionville, which will take place on Sunday, November 7th. 17th, not this Sunday, but the following. My guest, Jay Steiner, who's an artisan at Vermilionville, started the first event like this at Vermilionville with a lot of help.
I definitely want to give a little shout out to, a big shout out to Millicent Norbert, who is, we kind of do a tete-a-tete and plan the thing, but she's doing most of the work.
And she works with the restaurant at
Vermilionville. And Marcus Bergeron in the restaurant too, those two people who are, doing the
right. They're working with food all the time, and we want to say thanks to because during our fundraiser, Millicent helped to donate some food, and that was wonderful. We really
can't
love
go wrong with that.
The work she does there, and with some of these traditions, food traditions there. So, what's one of your favorite food traditions? Do you actually make some of the stuff yourself?
Yeah. I've been cooking a little less, cooking, not quite as, more. A little bit, healthier recipes lately. I've been, dropping some LBs. But I still, every once in a while, enjoy making a nice – my pork stew is probably one of my favorite things to make. So a little rice and gravy, can't go wrong there.
No.
I do enjoy making some – this time of year, of course, gumbo being the big thing. And I have my different – I have kind of two gumbos I make. I have my gumbo for me. And then I have my gumbo if I'm showing off for other people, which I haven't done in a while.
Show off gumbo.
That's a 2-day operation. That's
don't you
me.
Think people are always saying, "Well, what does he cook at home?"
Yeah,
that's the good one, huh?
That is. I enjoy cooking a lot of seafood at home too. I've been kind of doing a little bit more seafood lately. So I always grew up my mom taught me how to make, you know, some nice shrimp scampi growing up. And but then, of course, spicing it up my own way down here, adding a little bit more of that kind of, you know, Creole influence to it with my shrimp. And then shrimp Creole, too, is one of my other favorite things to make.
You know, and you're talking about you're going to add beef to this and the beef traditions, beef culture. Somebody the other day was asking a group of us, well, what's your favorite comfort food as a child? And I just had to say round steak.
Yeah.
Round steak and rice and gravy.
For me, it would be basically like hamburger steak and mashed potatoes because, like I said, Southern and South Louisiana.
Right.
But today, anytime I go to someone tells me about a new plate lunch spot, if I'm going there, the first thing I get, the way I will judge you is by your meatball stew.
Oh, meatball stew.
Because it's super simple, easy to perfect, but also easy to completely mess up.
You see, this is an endless conversation that people can have about what's their comfort food and what just makes them decide if it's a successful plate lunch place or not. So lots of things that we can learn on the 17th. Are y'all going to be giving out recipes? Or?
I will definitely. I might share some of my recipes, but of course, you know, just like any recipes, it's little things I've gotten from the years and this and that. Right. I will have a sizable little stack of cookbooks in the visitor center where I'll be giving my historical presentations on the history of, you know, pork culture and beef culture here in South Louisiana, throwing in a few other things. Might talk a little bit about some Columbian exchange and how these foods got here and those foods got there. And
Good.
It's been an interesting last 500 years, let's just say that.
To say the least. Well, I think people will be glad to know that there are some cookbooks because not everybody is an intuitive cook, perhaps like yourself, or knows all of the traditions.
Thank you for that.
So, yes, definitely knowing a little cookbook is there.
Oh, yeah.
So what time does it start on the 17th?
So it's going to be going from 10 to 4. Mm-hmm. The panel discussion is going to be at noon. We're going to have the soap making demo during the first part of the day back in the village. We're also going to have – I'm going to be doing my little historical presentations three times during the day. I think we're going to do 10, 11, and 1 for that. Then we're going to, of course, be – bringing in the pigs at from, you know, the cooked cochon de lait from the two different ways we're doing it at 2 o'clock. That's when we'll be having that. We'll have this other samples earlier throughout the day. And then, of course, the music is going to be kicking off from 1 to 4 as well. So 10 to 4 is the whole thing. I recommend coming for the whole day.
That's what I was going to say. You know, it doesn't sound like you want to miss anything on this day.
No, and there will be definitely – we have, of course, the restaurant there as well as some other food that will be for purchase, some boudin, some crackling, some pork stew as well. My favorite.
So right there will be enough for everybody. Well, thank you so much for all of your knowledge and effort in this event and making it available to all of us who perhaps grew up in the tradition and don't have an opportunity to observe it or participate in it, and definitely for those people who are from other places and really want to experience.
Absolutely,
this.
And bring the kids out. They need to be exposed to all
That's
that.
Right.
You got to have these kids know how to cook. You know?
They do, and you get to enjoy Vermilionville as well, which
absolutely.
At this time of year is wonderful.
It is nice out there right now.
So, cochon de lait at Vermilionville, November 17th. That's a Sunday, 10 to 4. And my guest, artisan Jay Steiner, will be the MC for the day, along with other experts in the traditions, talking about it and sharing their knowledge with us all. Thank you so much, Jay.
Thank you for having me.
Now, look at what's happening in the arts and culture in South Louisiana. This evening, the 2019 Flora Plonsky Levy Lecture will take place in Oliver Hall on the UL campus. Professor Jennifer Geddes will discuss resisting evil in dark times, learning from Holocaust testimonies. Her presentation will examine what we can learn from Holocaust survivors about enduring and resisting evil and the suffering inflicted by it. All are invited to attend 7:30 tonight in Oliver Hall. That is the Computer Science Building, and it will be on the first floor in the auditorium. Southern Screen Festival starts this evening. There will be a premiere of The Nightingale. The opening night begins at the ACA in downtown Lafayette at 6:45. The Nightingale will premiere, and then there will be a champagne and oyster social afterwards. There will also be quite a number of other premieres throughout the festival, which goes through Sunday. So from tonight through Sunday, there will be films, other activities, panel discussions, workshops. You can find a complete listing of all activities and a schedule at southernscreen.org. Here on the UL campus on Saturday, there will be a sitar and tabla concert, Northern Indian classical music. It will be a part of the concert series of UL Lafayette. Sitar artist Kartik Shadadri and also tabla player Arup Chateaubé will be in Ducre Auditorium in Angel Hall. That will be this Saturday, 7:30. Tickets will be available at the door. You can find out more by going to the School of Music website. That's this Saturday, November 9th in Angel Hall, Northern Indian classical music, sitar and tabla. This Saturday is Second Saturday Art Walk in downtown Lafayette. Lots of returning exhibits, some new exhibits. Opening at the Acadiana Center for the Arts, an exhibit called Close to Home by Alicia Fasciane. It's been inspired by books like Peter Rabbit and Alice in Wonderland, with amazing pottery that she set out for animals, beautiful table settings, and they made scratchings in all the wet clay, which she glazed. And these table settings are in the exhibit, as well as a video that she made of the animals actually coming to the tables. There's some embroidery of stories that people told her about animals in their lives. Really a lovely exhibit. That's Close to Home, opening at the Acadiana Center for the Arts this Saturday. And also a pretty amazing exhibit called Meet in the Middle that will be in the main gallery, featuring artists Alex Goss, Shauna Hone, Katie Heinlein, Mary Morgan, Jack Niven, Brooke Pickett, Jesse Vogel, and Mark T. Wise. The opening reception is this Saturday from 6 until 9 in the ACA main gallery. And then there's some pretty incredible pieces by probably over 40 artists who will be participating in the open studio tours in a couple weeks. They have about 100 pieces on the second floor of the ACA. You're invited to view those different pieces, various artisans and craftspeople in the community who are going to be opening their galleries and studios for open studio weekend. But the exhibit is on display at the ACA right now. And closing at the ACA is a very interesting exhibit called Emerge, 70,000 Eggshells that Susan Davi sculpted in the vault, the Rayo family vault. It comes to an end this Saturday when, at the end of Art Walk, she invites people to walk on eggshells and help her create something else out of the eggshells. So all are invited to that for Second Saturday Art Walk in downtown Lafayette. And if you'd like to know more, you can go to the ACA website. In Lake Charles, a new exhibit opened at the historic City Hall called The Global Language of Headwear, Cultural Identity, Rites of Passage, and Spirituality. It opened this week and will run through December 31st at the historic City Hall. This coming Monday, a very special Veterans Day celebration and lantern parade will take place in downtown Lafayette in Parc Sanssouci. It's called Red, White, and Blue Monday. It starts at 5:30 on Monday, and all are invited to attend. Also on Monday, Cane Fire Film Series will be screening By the Grace of God, a film by François Ozon, at the ACA, 7:30 on Monday. Next week, Monica Wright will be speaking about Arthurian court attire in the annual Gloria Fiera lecture. That will be Wednesday, November 13th, 7 o'clock in Oliver Hall. Her talk is titled fabulous fashion, clothing in the court of King Arthur. And there will be a bluegrass concert in Burke Hawthorne Hall next week, Wednesday, November 13th at 7:30. Dr. Lynn Springer is coaching the Vermilion Express, the university's bluegrass band, and the group's set list includes a mix of classics along with more contemporary bluegrass material. That will be in Burke Hawthorne Theater, Wednesday, November 13th at 7:30 on the UL campus. And the Acadiana Symphony Orchestra will be giving one of their concerts next week, Thursday, November 14th. The symphony will be playing the soundtrack for Beasts of the Southern Wild, and they will be showing the film and accompanying it with the soundtrack. They will be joined, of course, by the group that performed in the soundtrack, Lost Bayou Ramblers. For more information, you can go to the Acadiana Symphony's website. And for a listing of programs on KRVS, please stop by our website, krvs.org. You can look for the schedule. You can listen to audio on demand of all of our locally produced programs. And, of course, you can support KRVS at any time, easily and securely. Click the red donate button and make your contribution. Please stay with us this afternoon and evening. In just a few moments, we will join NPR's All Things Considered.
Hi, friends. I'm Pearson Cross, the host of By the Beltway, the politics and talk show bringing you Acadiana's leaders one-on-one. Did you miss my conversation with Ms. Marquita Walters, the Louisiana Secretary of Child and Family Services? Well, if so, listen to the program this Saturday at 5:30. Secretary Walters and I discussed her tour, the Investing in Louisiana Children's Tour, talking about balanced budgets for children, where Medicaid expansion fits into this, raising the age for children in the foster system, quality parenting and what that means, and the effect of poverty on family and child welfare. Listen to this informative conversation about the future of Louisiana's children and families with Department of Child and Family Services Secretary Marquita Walters this Saturday at 5:30 on Bayou de Beltway on KRVS 88.7 FM.
KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.